So we have until 1 o'clock. Usually there's more questions than time permits. We'll see how it goes today. Well, there's some very specific questions and some very general questions. Just take them as we go along. Here's a general one. And the punchline at the end is, sorry to ask, but I missed many classes. Say yes to Krishna. Does it mean accepting anything and everything favorable to Krishna? Is my understanding correct? Could you please summarize the essence of say yes to Krishna? What is my core take-home message? Well, certainly if whoever wrote this had attended the classes, it would have, the answer would be there. There's many, because there were many speakers speaking from many directions, there's many aspects to it. The high level goal kind of aspect is from the soul itself hankering again to be in relationship with Krishna. Again, that Rupa Goswami is our, amongst the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's our principal acharya. We're Rupanugas, we're followers of Rupa Goswami. So his writings are very important, and as important as translating Srimad Bhagavatam was for Prabhupada, he took a sidestep and translated a summary study of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or Nectar of Devotion, because we're followers of Rupa Goswami. And there's one verse in the whole of Nectar Devotion that's the principal verse, the principal Mahavakya, the principal utterance of the whole text, Paribhasha Sutra, another term, principal. All other verses are governed by this one. So this is repeating something that we spoke yesterday. In that verse, there are three parts that are secondary and one part that's primary. Tatastha Lakshana and Sarup Lakshana. So the three that are secondary doesn't mean unimportant. It means they're support for the primary, or they get support from the primary. A lively kitchen. Just set it down. So the three that are secondary, rather than giving the whole class over again, there's accepting things favorable, rejecting things unfavorable, accepting things that are free from sense gratification, and accepting things that are free from mental speculation, and cultivation of behavior that's pleasing to Krishna, and consciousness that's pleasing to Krishna. And the principal characteristic is accepting Krishna's pleasure as the say yes to Krishna element. It's the essence of bhakti. It's the principal dimension or aspect of bhakti. Wanting to please Krishna, acting internally and externally so that Krishna will be pleased. And following that one thing, the other things come behind it. then there's so many other, so the main take home is that one. Engage in bhakti means we make Krishna's happiness our objective, our goal. It's you cultivate love. Serve with the senses, the object of the senses, with the intention that Krishna should be pleased. So it's not just the activity, it's the mood of devotion by which Krishna should be pleased. Like Sudama. It wasn't because he was wealthy. He had like something very rich and luxurious to offer to Krishna, and so Krishna was pleased. Something was insignificant. But the love with which he was in his relationship with Krishna was what Krishna wanted. And Krishna loved him. So that's the essence, the take-home message. And whoever wrote this, listen to the recordings, because everything was recorded. And then you'll have some of the details that go along with that. And the next question is also broad, but it's related to the first question here. How to set goals is the question. From the class last night, I felt clarity in the ultimate long-term goal, and I still need to clarify what should be a clear, sustainable, and doable next step for me in that direction. How do I get more clarity and acceptance of my next step so I can have realistic expectations from myself or of myself and can take incremental steps toward the long-term goal? Well, we discussed that as well. And the 2 retreats ago here on Memorial in Gitanagari, is the answer to that question in great detail. It was acceptance and progress was the theme. So how to know what the next step for us is, in part is defining the long-term goal and then seeing where we are, being accepting of our present position, not imagine ourselves greater or beat ourselves up for being not what we aren't, just acknowledge where we are, and then consider for yourself a doable next step. Some of you may remember Acharya Nishtha's question. His question is related to this one. On the one hand, we should do things that are manageable and sustainable and, you know, in a regulated fashion, mode of goodness fashion. And we should always be attempting to do a little bit out of our comfort zone, a little bit, not something radical and extreme, a little bit. And how to understand where's that line between being comfortable and complacent because we're bound to our regulation and then something that's a little bit more. So the answer was individual to individual, it's different. And for a given individual at different times, it can be different because of circumstances of life and one's capacity and so on. So therefore, it's good to have or essential to have guidance. So the answer to this devotee's question is be nicely situated, seek out some relationship where you can have a confidential exchange with somebody who you can look up to, a senior Vaishnav, and open your heart, disclose your heart to that senior Vaishnav and take some guidance. They'll help you understand. So it's both the introspection and being realistic about what is sustainable and then take some guidance. Those are 2 standard resources. Take, for example, things that are recommended for devotees, like what you will observe on Ekadasi. So we have a minimum in ISKCON, and the minimum in ISKCON is we observe fasting from beans and grains. That's a minimum. And then what's the principle of fasting from beans and grains? There's another part to it that's increase hearing and chanting. Minimize necessities or attending to the demands of the body, and maximize hearing and chanting because it's auspicious, and so some little austerity, minimal is no beans and grains, minimal austerity, and that gives strength. And on an auspicious day, it gives special strength. So go for it. Something that's manageable, doable, sustainable. Add to that something. So you may do something. You may decrease on the bodily necessity side something. And or you may increase something on the spiritual side. Increase chanting of japa every Ekadasi. Some devotees have some vrata that every Ekadasi they'll chant instead of 16 rounds, they'll chant some number. A common practice wasn't like universal, but a common practice for quite some time within ISKCON was on Ekadasi we would chant 25 rounds. It's not a rule, it's just something that devotees liked doing and became kind of a fashion. The principle is something that you can do in a sustainable way towards a spiritual goal. Increasing on the spiritual side, diminishing on the material side. And what's doable for me? And then when you commit to do that, you do that. You do that in a sustained fashion for some time. So the question is, how do I know what's the next step? So introspection and guidance. You know, be realistic with yourself when you make some commitment to do something. Is it another question? At times I feel my heart just closes up, and thus I'm not able to invest feelings in any devotional activities or even in my relationships with other devotees. It feels everything becomes all the more mechanical. I tend to go into feeling guilty and try to distract myself from feeling that pain by other activities. What to do? And when that comes around, the little footnote is, it becomes harder for me to engage in reading and hearing and taking shelter of spiritual activity. When the heart closes, all of those things are things that happen. The answer depends on the person, but general principles that depend on the person, which are most applicable. Shri Shri Radha Damodar Ki Jai. When things are going well, don't become the enjoyer of the feeling that things are going well. Take that as an opportunity to gain strength so that when things are not going well, you can borrow from that strength. You know, the principle of shelter taking, not the principle of enjoying. So that when things are not going well, you're in the mood of shelter-taking, not in the position of suffering, because the circumstances aren't going well. In other words, look to find happiness in your relationship with Krishna, not which way the wind is blowing. Like that, you know, the Chinese farmer story. Good fortune, ill fortune, who can say? Be indifferent to the good circumstances. Not like, you know, not become a stoic, but look to Krishna's happiness. The bhakti principle is that we look to Krishna's happiness. And then with Krishna, he can do whatever he likes because he's very kind. And if the circumstance is rocky or bumpy or troublesome or whatever it is, difficult, we understand there's something inside. Krishna's helping that something inside become cleansed, and it's okay. Although it may not be easy as we're passing through it, but it's okay. Because we're in Krishna's hand and Krishna is very kind. It's the mood of taking shelter of Krishna. One may look for some other method, but the other method is going to be ineffective without the primary method. They're not a substitute for Krishna bhakti. Here's the when tribulations come. How to take personal criticism. If devotee is doing personal criticizing in public, what should be the response from our side? Well, depends where you are in your Krishna consciousness, how you respond. If you're primarily on the platform of the mind, then the mind's going to go way over there, and you'll feel anger. Or you'll feel victimized, or you'll feel something, some negative feeling, and you just live with that negative feeling because of something that's outside of yourself. Then you have nothing to do about it. I mean, you can't, someone that has such a nature is going to do something like that. I mean, it maybe there's solace to say, you just happen to be proximate and they move down the path a little bit and someone else is proximate, and they're going to criticize them, and then they're going to criticize them, and they're going to, because that's their nature. But that doesn't necessarily help the hurt that you feel because somebody criticized you in a public way. I addressed this the other day, if I don't mind saying it again and again. Rather than going into a reactive space, go into a mode of goodness space. The reactive space is like animal. I'm being attacked, I'm going to fight. Or the parasympathetic nervous system says fight or flight. So you can just be on that platform, fight or flight. That's one option, but that's not really the only option that's available. You can go into a mode of goodness space where you step back and look at the situation in a detached manner. Bhaktisiddhanta recommends when something like this happens, you look within and say, what is there within that's prompting this person to do what they're doing? Maybe it's just duality, like, you know, the sunshine, then there's rain, or it's daytime and then it's nighttime, or there's honor and there's dishonor. It's just part of duality. There's no real reason for it. It's just part of duality, and I have to tolerate it. That's one option. It's just you tolerate it because it's duality of this world. So that's, you know, when you're in that mode of goodness, reflective space, that's something you can decide to do. Just tolerate it. Another that I mentioned is particularly the devotee that has a problem in the workplace when people are mean. You can understand that where they're coming from is a place of pain, and their behavior is coming from that place. And so you can be forgiving because you can understand the behavior is coming from a place of pain, and you can pray for the well-being of that person who is behaving that way. Or you can think, what would be a useful service to help this person in the mood of trying to please Krishna and being of service to this other soul who has this thing about criticizing people, including me, but other people too. And it's hurtful to them. There may be something, it's another option in their reflective space. There may be something that I do that's irritating the other person, and I need to identify what that is that's irritating the other person and apologize to the other person or correct myself so that that irritation for the other person goes away. So there's many, many options, but the two principles at least. Go to the mode of goodness, reflect, consider what are options, and then in the mood of service, select one of those options. Now what I just explained is a Vaishnava way of saying what people that teach stress management teach. I learned this from somebody that teaches stress management. That their example is, here's how to get stressed out, and here's how to not get stressed out. So the starting point is, life throws rocks at you, and it hurts. And then you have some choices. You can just get invested in the hurt. You can get angry. You can get retaliatory. You can get back. Or you can run. Or you can just get invested in it hurts. That's getting stressed. And then stress management recommends you take a look at the rock, you toss it in the air a few times, and say, what are some options for me? And then you, internally, you can invest in one option is just something that you like to do. It takes the mind off of the hurt and puts the mind in what something you like to do. I like to sing kirtan. I like to something. And you invest in that something, and the pain, the feelings of being pained by the circumstance diminish. It's stress management. It's not a Vaishnava principle, it's just managing the mind's feelings principle. For us, it's taking shelter of Krishna. So we go to the Krishna shelter position and think of what would be pleasing to Krishna. Because that's really what's important. And the circumstance of the rock that was thrown at you takes your attention away from Krishna's shelter, and it gets invested in the temporary. It's not a perfect world. But if we continue to understand we're in the care ultimately, particularly as devotees, we're in Krishna's hand. And he's very kind and affectionate, and he's best. So we just stay there with Krishna. And whatever direction you go in, just stay with Krishna. Okay. Yesterday you elaborated that we start with the mind saying yes to Krishna, moving towards the heart. In the later session you described, Krishna can never repay the love and devotion of pure devotees. in magnitude, we can never be super devotees. How can we aspire for unalloyed submission when we aren't sure if we are operating at the platform of mind? Well, a starting point is, as discussed already, our position presently is mixed. There's some from the heart taking shelter of Krishna operating, and there's some from the mind taking shelter of Krishna operating. And then the mind that's taking shelter of Krishna is flickering sometimes and sometimes. Sometimes it's strong, sometimes it's medium, sometimes it's weak, sometimes it's crying. So there's the mind position keeps moving. So we should learn gradually to listen to the heart or introspect and ask ourselves the question and keep asking it and get greater and greater clarity. What's really important to me? What's penultimate important for me? Where do I want to be? Say, at the end of this life, and I look back on my life, did I do the right things? Did it take me to where I want to be? Where do I want to be? It's life management. And then taking the steps to get to where you want to be. In reasonable, incremental, you're not in a race against anybody, you're just cultivating whatever that is that you see as your goal. If it's being in your relationship with Krishna, then the choices that you make moment to moment in the course of the day, in the course of the week, in the course of the month, the course of the year, in course of passage of time, it's towards that goal. And if you keep moving in that direction, you'll get there. One who strives by right means is assured of success, Krishna says. We just continue. So the question is, how do we know we're going to get there if we're on the platform of the mind? Assume that there's a mix, and you can't stop the mind from being conditioned. Rather, you can make choices. One of the messages from this morning is, you didn't get the document, but you'll get it. When you get it, you'll see. It's making choices of the sounds that we hear. Where you invest consciousness. Each of us, for example, each of us has time wasters. Many of the messages that I get from devotees that start getting like a stronger inspiration to go forward in Krishna consciousness, invariably one of the things that they acknowledge is the time wasters. You know, one recent one was, in the afternoon, work in the office gets slower, and I just have this tendency of going to the internet, checking out news, and, you know, 45 minutes passes, and I just wasted time. Now what I'm doing is, I'm taking this, as soon as I'm feeling that, you know, restless thing, rather than going to the news, I go to a site where I can read Prabhupada's books. And I feel refreshed instead of, you know, kind of numb. And maybe, you know, we're used to that feeling numb. I know somebody that would, without too much detail, they started doing like that. They would come home from the day's work and they felt, I just really need to unwind. Because that's what they heard in the office, and that's what people in the office do. So they just started doing what people in the office do instead of when they come home, take a bath, sit down, and hear and chant and get refreshed, spiritually invigorated again, as they did in the morning before they went to work. So we're making choices. The point is, we're making choices regularly, and the sound vibrations that we choose to hear is particularly important. So then that can carry us from the mind platform to the heart platform, because we'll feel something. We'll feel that Krishna connection if we do that carefully and regularly. Now, these things are nice to hear. And then what's important for someone in the position that I'm in is I wish to see that the people who come to functions like this, there's some transformation. You know, not just information, but transformation. And the transformation comes very much like what Ramchandra was saying. When somebody hears and it goes in. And when it goes in, they live their life accordingly. They make some adjustments. It doesn't have to be grand. It can be modest, but make some adjustments in how they apply themselves to the bhakti process. Now here's a broad question. What I'll do after this one, see if there's, of all the questions so far, does anybody want to explore one of them further? So you can think about that. We heard that most people take to Krishna consciousness with their head, and then they may leave. Is there something we could or should do as a society or as an individual to prevent this from happening? Well, sure. However, that doesn't mean it's going to stop happening. I mean, one of the references that I made was Prabhupada saying this. Did I say this here? Maybe not. One lecture, 26 Second Avenue, Prabhupada looked around the room and was expressing this. He didn't say you start from the head. He said, there are many persons who take up Krishna consciousness and they don't stay for long. And looking around the room saying, basically, I'm very clear that some large percentage of you that are here today will not be here tomorrow. And then he's saying, but that's fine because any advancement in spiritual life is eternal. It's permanent. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatovayat. It's permanent. It's a permanent asset. So no harm. Some people come and they go. No harm. It's good. And then some people may stay. And that's good. It's even better than good. And then those people who stay and continue to commit themselves to the bhakti process, Prabhupada's point during this particular talk was, they are eligible for initiation. But not everybody's going to become initiated. And for that matter, just statistically, many people who become initiated don't maintain their initiation vows. Although vows are made before the deity and before the Vaishnavas in the fire. Just statistically, that phenomena happens. It happens, as far as I am aware, it happens less now in part because Prabhupada was being very liberal in giving initiations. And also our society is a bit more mature, and this has some bearing on what we can do. We can be a bit more mature or committed to taking care of people. Because one of the things that helps people, like we heard, there's good times, there's bad times. However, if the person who is having good times, bad times, has someone who they can confide in, who is giving them support and Krishna conscious help and guidance, and the affection of that devotee helps to carry them through the difficult times. So reaching out, not at the compromise of our own Krishna conscious lives, but reaching out according to our capacity and our time constraints to give care and genuine Krishna conscious association. So part of the answer is give genuine Krishna conscious association. It'll help people, the percentage of people going away. But then another is have the Krishna consciousness to give so that when you give, you're giving something substantial. So be Krishna conscious ourselves will help people from going away. But it's still going to happen. It happened with Prabhupada, so what about us? Now, he wanted to train some of his devotees to take care of others because he was in charge of a worldwide organization. And similarly, some of our leaders have vast responsibility and they can't give the kind of individual care and attention that they would like to give. The model of ISKCON is different than the village guru. The village guru would be there for all features of someone's life, but they weren't necessarily connected to this awesome disciplic succession and a worldwide organization and so forth. Therefore, we need to give training to those who can give training. We need to find persons who can give, can receive guidance and leadership of their lives and then can extend life leadership to others. That's something we can do as a society. And a little announcement or advertisement, I guess. This year, there's two such courses that are going to be taught around the United States. One of them, Vrajalila, who resides here in Gitanagari when she's not somewhere else. This is her home base. There's a formal course, so when you hear about it, if you have the opportunity, please sign up and attend it. It's called the Devotee Care Course. They may have another name, but that's how I know it. And it's taken 3 years. There's a devotee named Rasamandala from the UK, and he was given the material that they wanted him to put into a curriculum. He was commissioned to do it. He put it into curriculum. It was reviewed by the Devotee Care Committee that's been working together for 11 years. And this is one of the products of that committee is a devotee care course. So I sent it out to leaders in my GBC area and other areas that are outside that I have some interactions with. And if it's not this year, in the coming year or two, hopefully she'll visit many centers. And if that opportunity comes, please take it. The purpose of that course is to help train us how to extend care to others, the importance of it, and how to effectively and affectively, both. And a second is more of a course specifically for those who are already giving care to others to have skills to better do it. The course is called Vaishnava Life Counseling. The acronym is VLC. Vaishnava Life Counseling. And it's going to be taught in 5 different places this year. I know that because I helped arrange the places. And it's in the month of September. Over the Labor Day weekend, they'll be in Chicago. And then the next weekend, they're going to Alachua. They is a devotee named Ikshvaku and his wife. They're from Australia. He has a degree, a bachelor's degree in social work. And then he worked for the government with social work and learned the skills from college, practiced them in school, practiced them in his career, and then became a leader of a center and has developed the curriculum. And several devotees have reviewed the elements of the curriculum and its standard elements that he just Krishnaized things that people who teach this in universities and elsewhere, just standard material. Chicago, then next weekend is in Alachua, then next weekend is in central New Jersey, and then the next weekend is in Laguna Beach, and the next weekend is in San Jose. And then he's going to South America, and then he'll probably come back again next year. He'll go to Toronto and some other places. But it's aimed at giving tools and skills to people that are giving already, like a Bhakti Vriksha leader or somebody that's in some level, a president or department head or somebody that's giving care to others. Some people don't even have a title. They just do that as their nature. So how can we help is become more skilled. Note, in practical terms and affective terms, how to extend the kind of care to others that will help them overcome difficulties that their life is passing through. And this devotee from New Zealand, I don't know how he maintains himself. He probably has some kind of a job, he and his wife, but he's, as far as I know, he's going to be in different places in the world giving this course. Those are two that are just appearing this year. So I'm a believer in training and education. These are two elements of training and education that will help our worldwide organization or your local organization to be able to help retain people that come in with their mind, and then their mind takes them somewhere else. Largely, it's the relationships, just in simple terms, where someone feels that here's a person that cares about me. They've heard me. They understand me. I may not agree with everything they say. They may not agree with everything that I say. They're not judging me. And I can learn from this person. That helps a lot, that for someone to continue to stay, even when they start with the head. And then the head starts, the mind takes them over somewhere. But they have that relationship, and then they come back. Not always, but it happens. Whew. Two short questions. What is Maya? Why did God create the Kali Yuga? Well, what is Maya is a simple question to answer. Oh, I was going to say, any further discussion on anything that we've covered so far? Or just keep rolling? Uma, you have something? Thinking, okay. You let me know when you've got something. Okay, just like. What is Maya? A definition in the Bhagavatam. It's one of the Chatur Shloka, essential, four essential verses of the Bhagavatam, is Maya is thinking that something has value separate from Krishna. That's Maya. Thinking that there is, artha is the Sanskrit word, something that has value separate from Krishna. And there's actually nothing separate from Krishna. But moreover, to think that it is of value, and therefore you covet it, you want to have it, or enjoy it, or put it in your pocket and say it's yours. Be the proprietor of something that, a happiness that exists, or something that exists independent of Krishna, that's Maya. Know that as my illusory energy. Lord Vishnu says to Brahma. So to get out of Maya is to see things in relation to Krishna. Why did God create the Kali Yuga? We'll step back from that question. Why did God create? And the why he created is to give the living entity an opportunity to enjoy their ultimate happiness. Because living entities aren't hankering for that ultimate happiness. They're hankering for something else. So that the something else is provided, including Kali Yuga, to show people there isn't some happiness apart from him. But the opportunity to choose him is within the creation. Exactly as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, along with creation, I send forth generations of men and demigods and bless them with this process of sacrifice. So he gives the means to come to him with creation. But supposing people say, no. So, is there free will or is there not? And if there is free will, when somebody says no, that's what he gives them. He gives them no, a life of no. There's a longer version, but given our time constraint. Why? Because people say no. Here's a visual image that for me works really well. Supposing you start with a big, not just a bucket of paint, but a big vat of paint, white paint. And you take a little eyedropper, two, one with some red and the other with some blue. You just squirt a little red and a little blue and stir. It's off white now, no longer white. And because of the nature of, so red represents passion, blue represents ignorance, because of activities that are of passion and ignorance, it's not only the action, but it's the reaction. So with that eyedropper of red comes the reaction of another eyedropper's worth of red. Actions influenced by passion. Actions influenced by ignorance. So now it becomes more off-white and stir. And however much white you put in, you're still going to get off-white. And you just keep doing that and going out over time, and it gets darker and darker and darker. That's why Kali Yuga, because there's free will, and with the free will choice, it's the say no to Krishna choice, and passion and ignorance. Kamesha Krodesha. Rajoguna Samud starts with passion and it goes to ignorance. Boom, boom. It's a setup. So why have a setup like that? Why not have it Vaikuntha? Well, some people don't want Vaikuntha. They want separate enjoyment. And so there it is, creation for those people. But built into the system of creation is how to get back to the say yes to Krishna. And so that Kali Yuga is part of that. And for those that don't get the message in Kali Yuga, then what happens at the end of Kali Yuga, it's really interesting. Kalki Avatar comes, liberates everyone, and you're right back up to the top again, the big vat of white paint. Satya Yuga. It's a really cool arrangement. I'll give another visual. A whirlpool. So in the whirlpool, there's a vortex that goes down towards the center. So if you put something that floats, like a cork or a piece of wood, at the perimeter of the whirlpool, it goes around slowly. But because of the force of the whirlpool, it starts accelerating and go down, 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 down. So the good news is, at the end of the whirlpool, Kalki Avatar comes and puts everybody back up at the top again. Now, if any of us were God, we might not do it that way. And those of us that are kind of pained, we may say he made a mistake. But he doesn't make mistakes, and it's that the design is to help us get to the position of loving him once again. The fullness of potential of consciousness once again. That's what he gives us. Yeah. Go ahead. Microphone.
I think there are two things. I think they'll probably come out as comments more so, but...
This is a comment.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
The village guru, you mentioned village guru. It's actually been an idea that's been sitting with me for a while, how our society... It's almost like... I think it should be that way, to facilitate spiritual life
it's
better.
It's natural.
Yes.
It's natural.
And I'll be honest, it's been frustrating to not be able to see it sometimes, but it's not impossible, of course, and my vision is limited. But I was really happy to hear that these courses are going to be offered so that, I mean, I've always thought that there need to be more people who take on those roles of, it's almost like the village guru, it's not the guru, but it's the representative.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I'd like to comment on your comment.
I don't mind at all.
What you're saying, I say, but I use different language. The language that I use is Bhakti Tirtha Swami language. It's the village elder. Because, at least from hearing it from him, my assumption, hearing it from him, was that's the model in Africa. There's the village elder. And the village elder is respected. And they have that maturity and depth and wisdom. They're not, you know, the governor. They're just the village elder. Or in a family model, it's grandparents. So in ISKCON, what's the grandparent or the village elder? Well, people that have maturity and they have wisdom and they don't zoom around. They're available. They're proximate. And we can go to them, and they're just giving wisdom. So this is a young organization, you know, 50 years we just passed, and you know, some of our elder members are no longer with us, but some of them are with us, and you know, it's like Rabindra Swarup Prabhu. He now lives in Stuyvesant Falls, and he's the village elder up there. He's Mr. Wise Man. You know, he doesn't manage anybody's life. He did that, but now he's, you know, being the village elder. And it's going to take some time to get to that position. And training and education, and, you know, models of our social organizational structure that support such a person. Now, it worked for him because there's somebody that's monetarily taking care of his needs. And that's nice. And it's not usual. We're not there yet. We can't take care of the needs of the people that are willing to do full-time service. If we, you know, that's a whole topic. Whole topic. We're not there. What to speak of people that are the village elders? So to talk about it is one thing, and then to act on it is another thing. I mean, it's a big topic. Mm-hmm. So those that are in, you know, not just those that are in the leadership position, but persons that are in the position like you are in, should not complain about it isn't there, but should see to, you know, promoting that it can come to be. Because complaining that it isn't there isn't going to really help anything. So what can I do? What can you do? What can any of us do to help? So I'm a strong believer in, as I said, training and education. So how do you change, I'm a believer in this principle, how you change culture is through training and education. And not just sending people to courses. That's a beginning, but it's not how you change culture. It's institutionally making it required that if you're going to hold such and such a post, you have to have a minimum of training and education. An example of that is the disciple course. That's a culture-changing dimension to ISKCON. It's really good. The course is good, and to have it a required feature of initiation is good, in my opinion. And then supposing the day comes when, if you're going to be a Bhakti Vriksha leader, you have to take this Vaishnava life counseling course. That would be novel. And then, you know, supposing we got to that stage, there were enough people that could teach it, enough people that could take it, and so we're just changing the culture of our organization. It's not going to happen. Culture change doesn't take place so quickly. But what are steps in the direction is we value it and we put some, we have tools and we engage the tools and we, you know, make it a requirement. I was sitting in a, I went to an ear doctor because wax collects in my ear and there was a certain period of time that in flying in the airplane, my ears were in terrible pain because it was a big glob of wax. So I made an appointment for an ear doctor. It was a Chinese man. And he said, "So what's the problem?" And I told him, "Well, there's as big as the end of a pencil was, and it came out." He said, "Well, just the body has a way of taking care of itself. Well, let me look." So he's looking in my ear with his thing and says, "So you're a member of a religious organization. Are you one of the leaders? You look a little older." I said, "Yeah." "In order to become a participant in this, what's the training that you get? You know, to live in your monastery, what's the training that you receive?" And I had to fudge it. Now, there was a time when we had a Bhakta program, and there was, you know, formal several months of training. Now there are some places that do that, but it's not standard, and it should be. It's just a very natural question. You want to live in the monastery, what's the training you get? It's a beginning. But it, you know, it will help, you know, overall. That's certainly, you know, the very first principle that Prabhupada wrote about in the purposes of ISKCON. Systematic training to change the imbalance of values within society in general. So don't just complain. I mean, I'm sorry. Don't just say, "Oh, hey, that is, the glass is half empty." See what's there and then engage in what's there and encourage persons that can take advantage of what's there to take advantage of what's there. And, you know, be part of the cheerleading team. And then maybe become qualified to teach some of these things and promote some of these things by, at least by conduct, if not by taking some of the modules and teaching some of the modules. Because that's the plan. Not just he's the only one that can teach this. There's some higher level things, Ikshvaku Prabhu, some higher level things that really takes a professional. But there's some simple level things that modules can be learned and taught. Like the disciple course. There, anyway. Yes.
Seems like that would be really helpful even from a sense of a supportive community and a sense of, you know, being there for each other. Mm. I just had a little bit of a doubt at the same time that we also, you mentioned earlier about a few times about things being individual and, you know, needing to be specific to a person.
Yeah.
And the Tadvidhi Paripatena verse where we talk about inquiring submissively and rendering service to a person who's seen the truth and therefore they can impart the truth. So just a doubt in my head was that while the support would be powerful...
Satyasar? Excuse me. Sorry. He's about to walk out the door. Are we okay financially? Break even or not?
We're
breaking even. Okay, thank you. Sorry for the interruption.
Well, that was devotee care. Sorry. So just the thought that came to my mind was you know, on one hand it seems really powerful if as the supportive culture develops. At the same time, the whole village guru concept, I still had that gap of the guru is also a person who's seen the truth and is, and supposedly we're inquiring and submissively serving them to be helped find the truth. Combined with your, also what you said about individual attention. So how would that get, I mean, it just feels like, isn't there that need still kind of there?
It seems like which?
That while the supportive culture is good, that the need to have a personal connection or a time.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. I mean, I don't think what, do you know each other, Uma and Anuradha? So, she's not saying, let's put the guru over, way over there and let's have, you know, village gurus. And he's a nice guy, but you know, let's have somebody local. That's not what she's saying. She's saying, you know, the structure that we have now, to me, this is my understanding, it's missing that a very important element. Because revered as the guru is, he's here for a short time and then gone, and then there's here we are. And we need that spiritual support for our local community. Yes? That's what you're saying? No? Something like that? Okay. Maybe that's just my understanding superimposed on hers, but that to not one to the exclusion of the other, part of my picture is that we're a spiritual family and he's at the head of the family and everyone else is at his feet, literally and figuratively. And so now as a spiritual family, how do we function together? And those who are at his feet functioning as gurus, whether shiksha or diksha gurus, he's the one that we look to. And then the rest of the family is encouraged to look to him, and that's the standard that we follow. And then we have different roles to play within the family. The fathers and the mothers, and the friends, and the elders, and the, you know, seniors, and the whole, you know, we're just, so we have multiple relationships within the within the broader spiritual family, and this family is connected to the Chaitanya tree. We're just a branch of the Chaitanya tree, and that's part of what we are part of. And so, our function specific to it doesn't. There's no indication of neglect of the guru, and often Diksha Guru takes the title of guru and others don't, but I don't feel so comfortable with that. There's many persons who are guiding us, and it, anyway, and the disciple course teaches us that. There are many persons who should be respected in a very special way, whether they're the Diksha Guru or not. And that's part of ISKCON, is part of what the disciple course teaches, is part of what training and education will help accomplish. More respect that matches the reality of the situation. There are many people that are maintaining the lives of individuals in our organization, and we should recognize that and encourage it and also help train, because some people in those positions make mistakes. Just because, you know, good intention, something happens and it's not a good result. So training and education to help qualify people to do that. It's just part of the spiritual family picture, that, at least from my perspective. You want to add something? Here comes the microphone.
It might be a longer discussion, actually, but, well, I think there are two parts to it, or two additional parts to what you said.
Okay.
it's 10 minutes. When I had a discussion with Kalakanta Prabhu expressing something similar, and his response was that he can understand where I'm coming from, that there's this missing element in communities, and he shared that's why we all need to become qualified to take on these roles. And that sounds similar to what you're saying, but
yes.
I think my confusion is in exactly what village elder / village guru is like. Is it something like today we have systems like mentors?
That's not the same.
It's not, right?
It's not.
Okay, so when I said that I think we need more of these people, I was actually thinking along the lines of the mentors, but
okay.
The village, so I don't think it's different. Both can be needed. I just don't have, I need to work.
Think
about it.
That's one part. You have another part? I'm ready to respond to the first part.
No, I think that's enough for now.
Well, I'll take two examples because I have relationships with these two persons. Borijan and Rabindra Swarup Prabhu. Now, Rabindra Swarup Prabhu isn't a mentor. He's not a Prakivriksha leader. He's not doing that service, that performing that function. But he's an elder. And practically anything, he has deep realizations about so many things. And it's not easy to get him. But when you get him, you know, he's a village elder. And he can guide the whole organization or an individual or groups of individuals because of his deep wisdom. And Borijan is another similar person. He doesn't have any title. He's not a Bhakti-Bhiksha leader or a mentor. He's a guru that has a handful of disciples or whatever. But that's what I'm thinking of as a village elder. Now, there may be, you know, levels down from that. So more persons who can give the close kind of guidance, okay, mentor, Bhakti-Bhiksha leader, whatever. And this course is designed for those people.
Okay.
Because they're up there hands-on.
Yeah.
They're, you know, day in, day out dealing with stuff. And they're not trained. They just care. But, they make mistakes because they're not trained. And then it happens that people get hurt because they weren't trained. Not because they weren't sincere. So, what to do? Well, don't do that service because you might make some mistakes, or do the service as best you can, or do the service as best you can, and when there's opportunity, take guidance and training from such courses and from village elders. Go and sit at the feet of village elders and say whatever you need to say. Those persons in the professional world, this is where we have 6 minutes left till the bell rings. In the professional world, I've heard from those that are in the professional world, when you're doing counseling, it's an obligation, two obligations, confidentiality, unless the person's safety, well-being, his physical safety is at risk or another is at risk, is you maintain confidentiality. And the person that you're giving counseling to, they need to know that there's a person that you take things to. Because you can't just hold it. Here's some confidential thing about my life. Mm-hmm. They don't have to, but the person knows that there is a person that I'm accountable to. I'm the hands-on person, but there's a village elder that I take things to when I feel I need to, because it's weighty. And, they'll maintain confidence, but I want you to know that when you share something with me, I may take it to that village elder. Just as part of my profession, if that's not okay with you, then I can't be in this relationship with you. And the purpose is to protect the person who's extending themselves so they don't carry people's stuff. Because it's been found over a period of time that people that carry people's stuff get crushed. So it's just part of professionalism, and so we need multiple layers of this. We're not there yet. And ideally, you know, the tools for this, I'm pointing in the air, the tools for this are coming from something outside of ISKCON, because it isn't developed yet. But this, so when we were evaluating specifically Ikshvaku, he's an ISKCON man, as is his wife, and he's a leader within ISKCON, and he has professional training, and he has professional experience, so he's been able to ISKCONize what he's learned out there. And the person that was evaluating was Tamahar and Praharana, who both, anyway, he has a PhD in the field, and he was, you know, the president of places, and he's spiritually qualified and materially qualified, and he evaluated the curriculum is good and the credential of the teacher is good. So he gave it the okay, it's going to circulate in North America. But so it's hard to find people that have both, and they're willing to extend themselves. They're not strapped into a whatever it is, lifestyle, that they can't be available. So when we do training and education, we want qualified trainers and educators. And so we need to proliferate trainers and educators and give support to them. That's a brahminical function that requires contribution. Otherwise, it's fees, and then it changes into a different thing. Social engineering it's wonderful. It's a challenge. It requires maturity, and it requires finance, and it requires systems and structures, and it requires brahmanas that are wise, and administrators that are willing to accept that wisdom.
Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. I have a quick question regarding the influence of age.
Faith?
Age.
Age.
Yes, like Satya Yuga, Kali Yuga.
Oh, the age of Kali.
Yes, like the question we previously discussed.
That was your
about.
Question? No.
Yes.
It was
a short
question.
Okay. The question is, what is the range of this influence? I mean, it
what's
is
the
just
meaning for it?
The range.
Length?
Range.
Like R-A-N-G-E, range.
What's range. The range of it?
Yes,
in
I mean.
In terms of time or
I mean,
in terms
no,
of degradation
no.
or in terms of what?
In terms of the, like, is it just influence earthly planet or it's also influence
oh.
higher planet?
Okay. Space. Yeah, it's Kali Yuga, in upper planet, up to heavenly planets.
It's
up to and including the heavenly planets.
So
there's three. So, Bhuloka is where we are. Bhuvaraloka is above where we are. And Swargaloka, or heaven, is where the demigods reside. And as far as I understand it, up to Swargaloka, there's influences of the age of Kali. That is to say, ignorance and the diminishing of theistic conduct takes place in those three planetary systems and not above. That's my understanding.
So we'll go all over the universe?
No. 1, 2, 3, and then there's 4 more above that. Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka. So those are perfected souls, in highly elevated souls that aren't touched by such influences, such degrading influences. And below, they are. That's my understanding. Okay? That's your question. Okay. Well, there's a lot of pieces of paper up here. And it's 1 o'clock. And you had lunch at 10 o'clock? Or breakfast at 10 o'clock? Huh?
10-11.
10-11. So what to do? Shall I read some more questions and we'll go till 10-15 minutes? If anybody has to go, I guess they'll just get up and go. Take a few more questions. Because of past conditioning, I feel very self-conscious and uncomfortable doing some services. For example, Tulsi Aarti and taking darshan of temple deities when there are other devotees there. Instead of helping me to feel more focused on Krishna or Tulsi Maharani, I become extremely self-conscious, worried that I'll do something wrong or embarrass myself. That way I become more focused on myself rather than Krishna. This doesn't happen if I take darshan when no one else is around, or if I do aarti or other services at home. Is this offensive? And if so, how can I work towards overcoming it? Next question seems to be connected to the first one. Can you give me some practical guidance or tips how to not take shelter of the mind? What distinguishes the mind from intelligence? I'm not sure I understand the difference. Well, let's start with that last one. And the function of intelligence is, one English word is discrimination, which has a negative connotation when it comes to racial or gender discrimination. But discrimination means understanding one thing from another thing. Like when you take an IQ test, what they're examining is your ability to distinguish one thing from another thing. Because that's the function of intelligence. And intelligence that's materially directed is how the exercise of the faculty to fulfill a desire and know how to fulfill the desire. So you go to college so you can learn how to do stuff and then you can get a job and have a livelihood unless you get fired. You'll find yourself on the street again So intelligence is the faculty of discrimination, discerning one thing, you know, A and B, and how they're, if there may be some similarities, how are they different? The mind's function is described in two different ways: thinking, feeling, willing. Thinking, you think about something, that's what the mind does. Some feelings develop about that something. And then there's a willing, like, I want one, or I don't like it, or some feeling. And then from thinking, feeling, willing comes action. That's what the body does. But it starts with the mind. Thinking, feeling, willing. So once there's a will, then the intelligence comes into play. Can you get me one? Or, I want to go from Gita Nagari to my next destination. So you need some, you know, a GPS, or you need a roadmap, or you need someone to tell you how to get from where you are to where you want to go. Or any other thing. Intelligence, then, in the material way, intelligence serves the mind. It's upside down. Should be the other way. But in material way, it's how to get something accomplished. You need intelligence to do that, material intelligence. And another description of the function of the mind is sankalpa vikalpa, accepting, rejecting. Prabhupada discusses both of these, sankalpa vikalpa. So in the mind, there's this idea that starts to form, I think I would like da-da-da-da. And even as you're forming the idea of da-da-da-da, in comes another idea. Well, wait a minute, maybe it's not exactly da-da-da-da, it should be something over there. And then you start to develop in the mind some idea of something over there, and then, well, wait a minute, and the mind is always moving, chanchala. I'm very unsteady. But it's, the function is accepting, rejecting. So you accept something and you reject something else as a mind function. And intelligence is how to get it done. The proper order is not the material order. The proper order is from the soul desires something. It's of the soul. There's a, we were using the word sankalpa or intention or the craving or hankering, the aspiration of the soul. And then if the soul is in relation to Krishna, then Krishna gives the intelligence how to. And then the intelligence gives direction to the mind. Go there. Don't go over there. Go there. And then the mind gives direction to the senses. Extend yourselves this way. Don't extend yourselves because that's a contaminating place. Don't go there. That's when things are in proper order. So there are different functions to achieve a material or a spiritual purpose. So it all hinges on what your purpose is, or your goal is, or the intention, the goal of your life, the goal of the soul. What do you want? What's important to you? So those are the two functions, intelligence. So like to say, so here's a chair. Before there was the chair, there was an idea. And then the intelligence was needed to take the idea and give it shape. And then, you know, they started making chairs of wood, and then they started making chairs of other things and other things and other things. And that's technology. It's what you get jobs for, to know how to make things in a different way, new, improved. But that's intelligence that's resting upon fulfilling the dictates of the mind. It says, you know, my senses want a place to sit down when I get tired. Can you get me? Can you figure that out? Sure. Hey, intelligence. Yes, sir. Can you get a chair for me? Oh, yeah. I may have to go to school for a bit, but I'll get it for you. Then you make a chair. That's the senses directed by the intelligence fulfilling the desires of the mind. So, back to the question. So this feeling of being uncomfortable when you're around other people because I may make a mistake, well, please understand that when you're around Krishna, he's a person too. And if you make a mistake, which is more important, that Krishna sees the mistake or another person sees you make the mistake? If you're Krishna conscious, it's most important is to please Krishna. So now, what do we do when we make mistakes in serving the deity or Tulsi Maharani? We know that we're going to make mistakes. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, every endeavor is covered with some type of fault. So then the solution is don't do anything. But you can't refrain from action, Krishna says, even for a moment. So what do you do about the fact that there's going to be mistakes? We come before Krishna, just like we do at Aarti, we offer prayers to Lord Nrisimhadeva, and the purpose of that is to relieve us from whatever unintentional mistakes may have been there. We try to avoid, but it's going to be there. So whether you're with another devotee or other devotees before the deity or not, understand Krishna knows, and that's who we're serving anyways. And his great devotee Tulsi Maharani, we're serving Krishna's great devotee Tulsi Maharani. She knows. So it's the mind that's deceiving, or the uncomfortable feeling is a mind function. And what do you do about that? You get strong intelligence. And you get strong intelligence by considering what will be pleasing to Krishna, and that's what's pleasing to the mind. You tolerate that thought in the mind because you know what's pleasing to Krishna. this middle question, in a sustained way, how to not take shelter of the mind, we discussed this at length. Listen to the recordings. One more. Okay. How to be fixed in determination, these how-to questions. By nature, the determination factor is, in the beginning, it's much less, not with much devotion. The same nature is reflecting here with devotion. I'm sorry, I don't understand the question. Could you keep it simple, please? Go ahead.
My question is, like, by nature, my determination factor is always less, not just with devotion, with any activity, like...
Okay.
Yeah. So...
you want to know how to increase determination across the board?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, the same thing coming here.
Okay. Too. Two things. Work on spiritual determination, and it will automatically spill over to other. From spiritual well-being, material well-being follows, like a shadow. Follows the object that casts a shadow. So work on spiritual determination. And how to, that's the question, how to. Prabhupada answered this, I remember it very clearly, in his class on chapter 6. It was he went through all the verses and purports and had devotees read and it would interrupt and then comment and then continue and so forth. Called Topmost Yoga, chapter 6, Los Angeles, in the 60s. So increasing determination, Prabhupada explained, is to voluntarily accept austerities. Not radical, but voluntarily accept austerities. And then he explained, it's in his writings also. Ekadasi and auspicious days, appearance of Lord Vishnu, his avatars, or great acharyas. And those are Vaishnava austerities that we can take up for the purpose, same as discussed earlier, diminishing on the material, increasing on the spiritual, that will strengthen determination, that will then spread to other things. Not extreme, because it's extreme, then you'll feel bad, I couldn't maintain it. You beat yourself up because you... So it's just something that's in a step, and then another step, and then another step, and then another step. And maintain at each platform or plateau. And determination becomes stronger. The mind becomes stronger. The contemplation of other things diminishes, and the mind becomes stronger. Param drishtva navartate. You know the verse? Vishaya vinivartante nirashadehinam. So that verse, read the verse, by higher taste. And higher taste is you connect with feelings of devotion and love for Krishna. Okay. The 1:15 bell is ringing. I think we're going to end. Although there's lots of questions. Because we all have to get to our next place and serve Krishna there. So thank you all for attending. Been fantastic. Even it rained a little bit, it was next to nothing compared to what was predicted. Krishna's helped us. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.